So, as I de-sweat, despite its long history, probably one of the darkest moments in the tour's history is the 7 years between 1999 and 2005, for which the history books no longer list a winner. Lance Armstrong was stripped of his titles in 2012 after being found guilty of systematic doping by the International Cycling Union. Obviously, a lot of people were very hurt by the whole saga. I know one cycling fan who's recently sold their US Postal Service jersey that Armstrong wore for six of those wins after considering burning it in disappointment. To find out how organisations are now working to keep cycling and other sports clean through better drugs testing, I caught up with the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, David Hallman.
The most famous example of, in recent times, in cycling at least, of someone who's been found guilty of doping, it was Lance Armstrong. And he admitted last year to using the banned substance EPO and also to so-called blood doping. What do things like EPO and blood doping do? What does that actually mean?
Well, I wish he had admitted a little bit earlier than what occurred, but that's by the by. What EPO does is provide more oxygen to the blood and therefore enhance the way in which you can increase your exertion, so to speak. And it's the same sort of thing with blood doping.
So blood doping, as far as I understand it, is it when you remove your own blood before a race, so you've got a higher red blood level count and then you inject it back in at a later time?
That's one form of blood doping, yes. And it's very hard to detect because you're using your own blood to put back into your body. The examples of using somebody else's blood or some animal's blood is a little easier to detect. That's occurred in the past as well.
Now, Armstrong's defence for a long time was that he was tested as part of racing more than 200 times and was never caught. Why would things like EPO and blood doping not have appeared on these tests?
I could only guess, and there may be a number of reasons, and one is that he had very clever doctors or scientists that were able to manipulate his system at the time or just before the time that he was tested. And that's conjecture because it's not been proved. But we know, for example, that it is not too difficult if you're giving an advance notice of a blood or urine test that you can so manipulate your urine or blood. We also know, and Lance Armstrong's not the only one, Marion Jones, for example, is another one who never tested positive through her career but cheated throughout. And what we are trying to do is ensure that we do not rely solely on collection of blood and urine and therefore subsequent analysis of those samples, but also look at other ways of collecting evidence about how people are cheating.
2 years ago, when Armstrong's titles were withdrawn, I remember Pat McQuaid, who at the time was the president of the International Cycling Union, he said that the cheats were better than the scientists. Is that what anti-doping is about, just this long-term race between people who want to cheat in any sport and scientists?
Well, I think I would liken it to the race in any part of our society where people want to cheat. And you can look at the same sort of issue with, for example, plagiarism in journalism. It's never going to go away because people want to take shortcuts. We think there is a narrowing of the gap between those who are cheating and those who are trying to catch the cheats. And that has narrowed considerably since even Pat McQuaid uttered those words. But you're always going to get people who are prepared to spend a lot of money. And if you remember the amount of money that we've got at our disposal, we have about $28 million a year. That buys about a half a football player.
So EPO, you know, I remember it being talked about in cycling a long time before a test was ever developed for it. How do you develop tests for drugs that you're not 100% whether athletes are using?
Well, that's a scientific issue, and we spend a lot of money on research, and that research takes a while. Because at the end of the day, when you are putting together a detection method, you have to be pretty close to 100% sure it's not going to produce false positive cases. The EPO test was looked at way back in the 1990s, and it took 5 or 6 years before scientists could agree as to what sort of approach could be used. And if you remember in the Sydney Olympic Games in 2000, there was a urine/blood approach suggested, and it took quite some time before there was a settled test for detection of EPO. That occurred with urine in 2001. So these things take time. What we've found of more recent times, though, is that taking EPO as an example, we're now into about the third or fourth generation of EPO-style products. And remember, these are products made by the pharmaceutical industry for good and proper health reasons. So there are products that the pharmaceutical companies are putting together on a regular basis, and we need to keep up with what is being made available because the cheating athlete uses them for the wrong reasons.
I mean, it's not just blood and urine tests for specific drugs that athletes have nowadays, but also these biological passports. What does that mean, and sort of why were they introduced for the first time?
Well, the biological passport was actually introduced at our suggestion by UCI in 2007 after a pretty unfortunate tour that year, because it was a way of not only detecting whether athletes were using banned substances, but also a way for athletes to be able to put their hand up and say, look at my profile, it's normal. And what it does is it collects results from a number of samples. You need 4 or 5 blood samples over a period of time so that you can look at the profile of any athlete and you can see the spikes, the ups and downs in the profile. And if they're not explicable by normal medical or health reasons, then you have to look further and say, is this doping or is this a medical problem that the athlete has? And you conduct a medical inquiry into it.
Some athletes do have naturally higher testosterone levels and things like that. How do you judge what's normal?
Well, testosterone's another issue, and what we've got now for testosterone is the ability through the steroid module to assess a testosterone level in an athlete. And again, it comes down to what is normal for that athlete. So you're quite right to say it's very difficult to say what is normal across a whole human population around the world. What we have had in the past is a ratio of 4 to 1 between epitestosterone and testosterone, which has proven to be too conservative, because you might have a normal testosterone level of 1.5 and you can therefore cheat up to 4. So what they do now is they look at a profile gathered from urine testing, and in the same way as I just described the blood, over 4 or 5 samples, look at what the normal TE ratio is. And if the athlete sits into that ratio normally, then there will be no further inquiry. If he or she doesn't, and there's a peak or a trough, then we have an implement called the carbon isotope ratio approach, and it automatically goes into that and tells you whether it's synthetic testosterone or not.
Biological passports have been introduced in cycling for a while, and they're becoming more popular in other sports. So tennis took them on last year in 2013, and they were used up in the World Cup at Brazil for the first time in this year. Why are some sports quicker to take on anti-doping measures than others?
Well, I think it's because they're not mandated to. If somebody's told to, they will do it. If it's discretionary, people will do it when they feel that it fits their sport or suits their athletes and it's helpful for them. And I think what we've found is that the take on the passport has taken a while. Therefore, people have been reluctant to use it unless they are sports where they've had, let's call them problems or difficulties historically, where they feel that the passport will be very useful. Now, what we've seen now, and particularly with football picking it up, is that sport in general realises that this is a better way to go than just relying on urine collection alone.
David Hellman, the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency.